There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Right, well, let's just deal with those lives, if we can, into the second hour of the show. Broadcasting live from Barasti, where the game is always on, if you fancy your football derbies. Merseyside derby on now on the big screen down here at Barasti. But if you want to watch any of the other early kickoffs, then get yourself down here. They've been shown on any number of these screens down here. There's also live rugby down here at the moment. So let's put you in the picture of those lives, because let's go to the Premier League first and foremost. Everton against Liverpool. Half an hour in. Mark Archer's got half an eye on this one for us.
Yeah, it's 35 minutes gone now in the match at in Merseyside at Goodison. Everton 0, Liverpool 0. The busiest two players on the park, Tom, have been both goalkeepers. Jordan Pickford trying to impress the onlooking England manager Gareth Southgate. He's made two or three excellent saves. He's kept Everton in the game. At the other end, Karius in goal for Liverpool's actually made one world-class save as well. So 35 minutes gone at Goodison Park. Everton 0, Liverpool 0, red versus blue, still 0-0.
Two early kickoffs in the Championship for you as well. Norwich against Villa is 0-0 in that one, but there has been a goal up at Barnsley. Barnsley taking on their arch-rival Sheffield United. It's 1-0 to Barnsley in that one. There are other games being played across the continent as well. There's an early kickoff over in Spain, over in La Liga. No goals in that one, though. Alaves taking on Getafe, and it's 0-0 into the second half there. Just in terms of what's going on in Spain, we've got Celta Vigo against Sevilla. Real Betis take on Eibar, and then Barcelona in action later on this evening, 10:45 this evening, they take on Leganés. Full schedule in the German Bundesliga from 5:30 this evening, with a late game Hamburg against Schalke later on this evening at 8:30. Four games to look forward to over in Italy, when Benevento take on Juventus. That one's off at 5 o'clock. Roma against Fiorentina, Spal take on Atalanta, and the Sampdoria at home to Genoa. And there's full games to look forward to, a full list of games to look forward to in Ligue 1. Monaco kick things off against Nantes at 7 o'clock this evening. The late game down there is Toulouse against Dijon at 10 o'clock. And there are games over in the United States as well today. Lots of focus on the Major League. And we have a result from a little earlier on, where New England took on Montreal, the Montreal Impact. And it was New England who routed the Montreal 4-0. And I believe that LA are in action a little later on. I think they're taking on Atlanta. That one in the early hours of tomorrow morning. We'll have details on that for you a little later. Not all about the football there. There is rugby union for you. Mark Archer has got an eye on that one. Have we got live in the Super League or not?
Super Rugby, we've just had a result full-time come in from Canberra, where the Brumbies were taking on the Reds in an Australian derby, and the Brumbies have prevailed 45 points to 21. So the Brumbies defeat the Reds 45-21. Early today in Hamilton, the Chiefs got the win against their New Zealand rivals, the Blues, 21-19. It went down to the wire. The Chiefs with a pushover penalty try at the end, clinching the victory against the Blues. The Blues have a terrible record in the New Zealand derby matches. Looked like they might get a win there, but the Chiefs were too strong in the end. So the Chiefs defeating the Blues 21 points to 19. And in the very early hours of the morning in Tokyo, the Waratahs were far too good for the Sunwolves, 50 points to 29. A couple of matches later this afternoon, Tom. In South Africa at Emirates Park in Johannesburg, the Lions will face the Stormers. That's a South African derby. We are having a lot of derbies today, not just in English football. And then in Argentina, the Jaguares take on the Crusaders. That's the late kickoff.
That's what's happening there. There were a couple of games last night as well in the world of rugby. Sale edging Wasps in a thiller. And I think it was that
Our mate, Marlon Yard, down here a couple of weeks ago, scored the winning try, last-minute try, that saw Sale defeat the Wasps 28 points to 27. So good friend of the show, Marlon Yard, came and talked for about half an hour when he was on holiday in Dubai a couple of weeks ago. Good to see him scoring well. And he may be a player who might be able to force his way into Eddie Jones's reckoning. Of course, England touring South Africa in the summer. Obviously, probably looking at some changes in that squad. Potentially, Marlon Yard might be one guy that Eddie Jones might consider. So that was the result. There are four other matches in the Viva Premiership, starting the first couple of matches at 5 p.m. Bath hosting Leicester Tigers, and at Northampton will face Saracens. And there's a bunch of matches also in the Pro 14 and the Top 14 in France, Tom.
Right, we often talk about bucket lists when it comes to all things sport, and we have Ross Chris, the best travelled member of the Grill panel, alongside us at the moment. He's basically willing to go anywhere for experiences. One thing we want to put on your list of things to do, he's probably going to come back and say he's done it already, Hong Kong Sevens. Got to do it.
I'd love to go. I would love
to go. Got to do it, Christo.
It'd be great. It would be good.
It's on at the moment into day two. I can't think of, are there any other tournaments that go over 3 days, Mark Archer? Because that's one thing that Hong Kong has, isn't it? They had the first pool game on the Friday, and then, of course, they move into the rest of the pool games on the Saturday and the Sunday.
Of course, Dubai Rugby Sevens goes for 3 days, but only 2 days for the elites. Obviously, yeah, they have all the 240-plus invitational sides and school teams and club sides play over 3 days, a Thursday, Friday and Saturday. But no, Hong Kong, it's a three-day event, and if you're still there on the final day, you've done a pretty good job.
Have you done it or not?
I haven't, no. I mean, I used to... The thing about Hong Kong is really the one iconic event that stayed around for many years. And I remember it's always in around this time in April and Easter. And as a New Zealand rugby fan, we used to always watch this because this was in the old days when they didn't have the circuit. And they had a couple of sort of isolated sevens events, but Hong Kong was the pinnacle. And we saw many of those New Zealand 15s players all burst their way into reckoning at Hong Kong. The likes of Jonah Lomu as a youngster, Christian Cullen, Eric Rush, all these players who were big name sevens players, always had to win a Hong Kong. It was the event that the players wanted to do. You know, we saw so many of those iconic 15 players do something in Hong Kong. David Campese is another one that springs to mind for Australia. So, no, unfortunately, I haven't got a chance to go to Hong Kong yet. It's on the list, Tom.
If you get the opportunity to get down there, it is an absolute ball of a time. It's amazing. I had a mate who went a couple of years ago. He went as a 10-pin, a pin. Is it called a pin? A bowling pin, yeah. So they went with 10 pins and one ball. And they said it looked amazing.
Who got the unlucky draw of being the ball?
They said it looked amazing. I don't know who got the ball, but they basically it just got pushed around Hong Kong for 3 days. Looked amazing, apparently, but there was one little technical flaw, which is that they couldn't drink anything in these things. They couldn't raise their arms, so they had to have everything through straws. And obviously it gets a little bit hot in those things, so you've got to take on as many liquids as possible, and certain liquids through certain straws ain't a good idea, especially if you're in if you're dressed up as a bowling pin. Obviously the other thing I want to talk about though with regards to the Hong Kong Sevens, it's a bit of a weird one this year, isn't it, Christo? Because we've been looking into it, we've been watching it over the last couple of days. Not everyone's gone with their full strength sides.
Yeah, that's exactly right, because of those Commonwealth Games we were talking about in Gold Coast, Australia, many teams are sending their number one-sided team, if they are part of the Commonwealth, to Australia to compete in this tournament, as it happens only once every 4 years, and you have the Hong Kong Sevens occurring every year here. So are the fans getting gypped out of seeing a good team out there in Hong Kong? You have to wonder, because, you know, you pay a lot of money for these tickets and you're not seeing the best product out there on the field. Certainly you're going to be rooting for your team as they go for it in Australia. But, yeah, there are some teams that are a little bit light on the numbers, Tom.
Certainly England have not gone with their full strength team. They're down in the Gold Coast getting ready for next weekend's Sevens at the Commonwealth Games. We've also seen weaker sides from South Africa and a couple of the other nations that have gone as well. Interesting decision, I suppose, Mark Archer, because Commonwealth Games, we're speaking about their validity and their sort of global worth a few moments ago in the first hour of the show. Weighing that up against what is one of the fastest growing sports in the world and the investment that comes in from World Rugby into the Seven Series, points on offer at Hong Kong.
Yeah, it's a tough decision because obviously the teams play the sort of the 10 HSBC World Series events, and you accumulate points and you can be the winner of that. And you then once every four, and this is an annual series, so it goes on every year. And then once every 4 years, you have a Commonwealth Games. In some ways, it's a bit like then you have an Olympics thrown into every couple of years, you know, every 4 years as well. So for those players to win an Olympic gold medal or a Commonwealth Games gold medal, it is quite a big, you may only get one or two chances in a career. So I guess the national federations have to prioritise that. At the same time, you're playing in this annual series, you want to send a strong strength team. It benefits a team like the US, of course, who aren't taking part in the Commonwealth Games. This gives them a really good chance to win a bigger IRB event. But I'll give you a rundown of what's happening in Hong Kong, Tom, just to whet the appetite. And we talked about some weakened teams there, but I can tell you that two of the stronger teams have had good pool play performances. South Africa and Fiji are the only teams to complete pool play with a perfect record of 3 wins. Fiji also have defeated New Zealand by 50. They racked up 50 points against them, which is a massive win in sevens. So obviously New Zealand a lot weaker. And Spain, obviously taking advantage of not being in the Commonwealth, have reached their first cup quarterfinal since 2012. So the cup quarterfinal draw for tomorrow is as follows. Fiji will take on Argentina. South Africa will take on Spain. The big match here is Ross Chris's USA taking on My New Zealand, and Kenya will play Scotland. So that's the eight teams in the Cup quarterfinals. That action gets underway tomorrow.
Yeah, Scotland are victorious against England yesterday evening, then England going down to the South African team a little earlier on. South Africa looked really strong in this tournament, which is amazing because their big team has gone down to the Gold Coast. So this is the junior blitz blockers or whatever they're called, and they look to be just as destructive as the senior team. Interesting point coming through from one of our listeners out there. Not every sporting event needs to be the best in the world like an Olympics, guys. The Commonwealth Games plays a very important role for many countries as a development platform for juniors or an international arena for countries that would not make an Olympics. Thanks very much indeed for that point. Thank you for that. And thanks also to Zeeshan being in touch. Zeeshan is a Gooner. He's also a Ross Crist fan as well, so he's got everything going for him, really, isn't he?
He wants to pick many winners there then.
He wants to know, Ross, are you got any WrestleMania predictions, buddy?
I don't have WrestleMania predictions, but I did watch the WWE Hall of Fame speeches that happened yesterday. Seven inductees into the Hall of Fame. My favorite would be Mark Henry for the world's strongest man. He's former strongman that made the bridge over to the WWE. So Zeeshan, if you saw that one, if you got to see the Hall of Fame inductions, they were really, really good. And the Ultimate Warrior Award went to Jarius this year, the 15-year-old kid that had the double liver transplant, who got to storm across the WWE and the New Orleans Saints team. So he was quite remarkable. So hope you watch that one, big man.
Thanks very much indeed, Zeeshan. Keep your thoughts coming in. Text them to us on 4001. Half-time in the Merseyside derby. What's the score, Mark Archer?
0-0. No goals on Goodison yet. A couple of great saves, though, by the Everton keeper, Jordan Pickford. He's kept Everton in the match. Carrius for Liverpool's also made a world-class save. But no goals to speak of. Everton 0, Liverpool 0.
We will take a short break. When we come back, we continue the conversation. In fact, we are going to turn our attention to all things US sport after this.
Let's go. This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Indeed, we are. We are very much live from Barasti, and the game is very much on. Half-time in the Premier League. It is early kickoff, and it's the Merseyside derby. 0-0 in that one. We've got the Man City, Man United game to look forward to a little later on. Full schedule in the Premier League before that, and live action here on Dubai Eye 103.8. Just been a goal in the Championship. Another goal in the Championship. That is Norwich have just taken the lead against Aston Villa. Half-time in that one. Half-time in all the games. So it's Barnsley 1, Sheffield 0, Everton 0, Liverpool 0, and Norwich 1, Aston Villa 0. Let you know when the goals go and in, as and when. Let's get the latest now from Ross Crist, who casts his eye on all things US sport.
Yeah, let's head back over to the United States of America, but we're not going to talk about America. We're going to talk about an Irishman in America. UFC star Conor McGregor released from custody after posting a $50,000 bail Friday after a brief arraignment on assault and criminal mischief charges stemming from an outburst at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn. What happened? Well, allegedly, it's kind of hard for him to argue this one because this one is all on camera. McGregor showed up with his posse at UFC 223 media event at the Barclays, and he was caught on camera throwing a hand dolly through the window of a bus that was carrying all the UFC fighters that just participated in the media event. Not only did he break the bus, he actually injured three of his fellow co-workers in this argument. The judge issued an order of protection for several fighters, including Ray Borg, Michael Chesney, and ordered McGregor to stay away from them in person and on social media.
Can you give me a bit of background on this one? Why has he done it?
Well, Conor actually hasn't had his day in the media, but everyone can kind of assume that, well, for two reasons. Conor likes to kind of boost up his profile by doing antics, so this would definitely fit in that realm. And he's upset over his vacated title. He hasn't fought in over 2 years, so Dana White needs to keep the show rolling. So they're having his belt is up for grabs right now in the UFC because Conor had to vacate it when he went and fought Floyd Mayweather. Conor McGregor hasn't fought in a UFC ring in about 2 years' time now. So what do we do with his belt? You can't just have it sit there. There's other fighters who are fighting for this thing. So Dana White did the right thing, and he's putting his belt up for it. Obviously, Conor is upset with it. There was a dispute about the vacated title. The person who he was arguing with wasn't injured. He was on the bus, but it doesn't look good for Conor McGregor. This is a guy that just had a kid He's a role model. Of course, he's a decorated fighter. He's done a lot of things inside of the ring. But this is just one of those things that's just outside of the ring, just an eyesore for you.
But he seems to be doing that more and more, doesn't he? And I've noticed it in recent times, and you'll know better. You know, he's going along to other... Does he manage other fighters? Has he got his own sort of... His own academy, his own school now? Or is it just he just like to be this sort of argument picker?
Yeah, he does. He's starting to get into the management of fighters. He has Dublin's SBG Ireland. One of his best friends, Sian Cowley, was arrested with him, who also got charged with him in this. He showed up to the ring with about 30, as Dana White would describe them, thugs. They were let in through a side entrance through one of Conor McGregor's publicists to basically come in and terrorize these guys. The big fight that's going to be going on is Khabib versus Alan Quinada Saturday in the main event for UFC 223 for the undisputed lightweight title, which McGregor held. So this is the title that McGregor was really upset about. Now, a lot of people came on social media after this happened and said, you know what, this is just another stunt. Dana White, he put this all together. He wanted Conor McGregor to get arrested. He wanted this to sell some pay-per-view tickets, to sell some seats. But Dana White came out and he said, absolutely not. No way.
Conor and I have a great relationship, right? And everything was great. Listen, he knew he hasn't fought in almost 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, the Mayweather fight doesn't count in the UFC. So it was almost 2 years since he fought. And, you know, he was saying he wanted to come back in September, which would have been 2 years. So, you know, the division has to move on. So we had done an interim title. And now this was for Conor's title. And when he came back, he could fight the winner for the title. He could, you know, move to 170. He could go to 145. We've pretty much let him do whatever he wants to do.
You know, the way
I've actually been ridiculed for letting him do what he wants to do.
And to be clear, you've spoken to him since this, yes?
We had a text session yesterday that was not very good. It was, you know, most of the things I would rather not say and probably can't say on TV.
Are there any details you can share with us?
Is he apologetic at all?
No.
Okay.
He said that he was apologetic toward Rose because Rose Namajunas was very upset. Obviously, Michael Chiesa, and he didn't know at the time Ray Borg was hurt too. But, you know, he was apologetic about the people that, you know, he wasn't trying to hurt, but he felt like the Khabib thing had to be done.
You know the way this stuff works. You know half the world out there is saying this was a stunt, this was planned, this was fake. What's your reaction?
This is the last stunt on earth we would ever pull. I mean, this is embarrassing for the sport and, you know, for obviously for the UFC, and this is the furthest thing from a stunt.
Hard to disagree with Dana White there. He sounds genuine, doesn't he?
Sounds genuine, but I suppose he's in a difficult position, isn't he? Because on the one hand, he's got, you know, his crowd puller, his dream card, and he needs to manage him accordingly. But at the same time, he doesn't want to alienate him. So is it more man management he needs?
What he needs right now, the best thing for Dana White would be to have him to develop another Conor McGregor so he can just say goodbye to this antics. Right. But one thing that the UFC is having trouble, that I'm going to see them having trouble within the next couple years here, is they're kind of holding on to this old talent. We see it with McGregor. Yes, McGregor is a stud. But is McGregor in his prime right now? Who knows? He hasn't fought in 2 years. Ronda Rousey, they held on to her for so long, and they kept hauling her out to the ring, and she kept getting beat up. Boom, now she's in the WWE. Another person, Brock Lesnar, they keep bringing him in the ring. So what the UFC needs to do to get out of all these antics so they can move on from Conor McGregor, so Dana White doesn't need to be held captive by him, is to develop another big star, to develop someone like that, and they just don't have that right now in the ring for them.
The big thing about the UFC, and we've talked about it actually in boxing for a number of years now, and boxing seems to be emerging, they need personalities, they need storylines. And the UFC, unless you really follow it closely, there's not many guys that sort of transcend the sport. Conor McGregor managed to do that this year, and he made people like me and you, Tom, who aren't that interested in UFC generally, be interested in UFC, but I think that Conor McGregor came out of it. We've seen it a little bit in boxing now. Obviously, the bout last week, Anthony Joshua is starting to build a personality, starting to build a bit of a following.
Doing yourself many favors last weekend.
Well, look, but people tuned in to watch that fight because now he's starting to become someone. He's got three belts. Can he get this Deontay Wilder fight? Can he make it four belts? That's become a talking point. So Joshua is doing something, that heavyweight division that's been in the doldrums for a long time. All of a sudden, it's actually looking quite exciting. So just like boxing needs these personalities, UFC is sort of the sport that does need guys to take the sport to another level.
You look at the history of the UFC. They used to have Ken Shamrock. Then they had Chuck Liddell. Then they had Quentin Rampage Jackson. Then they had Brock Lesnar. Then they had Ronda Rousey. Now they're in the Conor McGregor era, and he's redefined the whole entire era. Who's going to be the next person? Right now, it's completely anyone's ballgame in the UFC.
Question then, why, given Conor and given his attitude, given the fact that he is on top of his game, given the fact that he is the crowd, why is he not fighting? Why does he not want to fight at the moment?
Well, he just had a kid, didn't he? So he just had a boy, and he just got paid $100 million to take a beating from Floyd Mayweather.
100 million reasons why he's not fighting at the moment.
So, I mean, he stepped into the ring with that Floyd Mayweather fight, and yes, he trained his butt off for that one, but I'm thinking he's probably just sat back. He said, my wife's pregnant. I just got my big paycheck. I'm going to sit and, just enjoy the sunrise and sunset for a little bit.
But is he going to want to fight again, though? Do you think he's going to see him again?
100%. Conor McGregor will be in the ring again. 100%. I think Conor McGregor is actually a little bit upset that his belt is going elsewhere. I think he thinks he's bigger than the game, yeah, which in many ways he is. But at the same time, Dana White has a product, and the people need to see fights in that ring. You can't wait years and years and years for the light heavyweight title belt not to go anywhere. I mean, people want to see this title. They want to see the bouts. So Dana White's got quite the situation on his hands. But I'll tell you what, all of this, no matter what you think of Conor McGregor, people are going to tune into the UFC this upcoming weekend.
We will take a short break. It is 4:30 in the afternoon. What's still to come here on the show? Chris McCarty is still to come on the show. We're going to be catching up with him. He's live down at the Bahrain Grand Prix. So we'll hopefully get Chris on just after 5:30 this afternoon. We've also got live commentary from the Premier League coming away just as we go off air at 6 o'clock. We'll have build-up ahead of that one for you a little later in proceedings. If you are in the vicinity, I would recommend you come on down to Barasti. Watch the game down here. Watch all of your sport down here, because the game is always on.
Oh, it's a fabulous goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Well, let's put you in the touch of live scores. Premier League, no goals in that one. Half-time, they just come out, in fact, for the second half, just got underway. The two managers on the sideline, Jurgen Klopp and Sam Allardyce. It's 0-0 Everton against Liverpool. A couple of goals in the Championship. Still half-time at Norwich. They take the lead against Aston Villa. It's 1-0 there. And Barnsley still with that one-goal advantage over Sheffield United over in the Championship. What's happening in the rugby? Mark Archer's keeping an eye on this for us.
Yeah, full-time in the Super Rugby match from earlier today. The Brumbies have won a home match in Canberra against the Reds, the Australian Derby, 45 points to 21. The Chiefs won the New Zealand Derby against the Blues, 21 points to 19. And over in Tokyo, early hours of this morning, the Waratahs were too good for the Sunwolves, 50 points to 29. Super Rugby coming up late this afternoon, Tom, from Johannesburg, Emirates Park. It's the Lions facing the Stormers, two South African teams going head-to-head. And the late hours of this evening in Argentina, it's the Jaguaris taking on the Crusaders from New Zealand. Hong Kong Sevens, we've just told you earlier who is in the quarterfinals there. And, of course, there's four matches in the Viva Premiership, five matches in the Pro 14, and also some matches in the French Top 14 as well.
Loads going on, and if you haven't got enough by, well, what time? What time are they going out for round three of the Masters?
They will tee off. The very first tee-offs will happen probably around 8:30 our time, so you can tune into that. Actually, I misspoke there, Tom. I think 6:30 our time you can tune in and catch some of the first pairings. Some of the people you'll see out there first are the people that didn't have the greatest rounds, and that would be Mr. Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson. They are going to be part of a feature group Saturday morning. Phil Mickelson is 5 over. Tiger Woods is 4 over. Some other pairings also, Spieth and DJ, and then Stenson and Rory. What a treat that one will be. Some other scores. Freddie Couples, former Masters winner, he's at 2 over. He made the cut. Freddie Couples always plays well in this tournament, does well here. Dustin Johnson, he's at 300. Jordan Spieth at 400. Rory McIlroy at 4 under. Henrik Stenson at 500. Mark Leishman at 7 under. And the man of the hour is Mr. Patrick Reed, who went to Augusta State, so he's used to this course. He's at 9 under, shooting a 66 on round two. He will be paired up with Leishman and the leaders for Saturday.
Talking of that pairing, Mark Leishman and Patrick Reed will be the final two players to go out in round three. Interesting stories for both these players, yet to win a major, but very, very good players. Let's just have a quick listen to the stories, the backstories of Mark Leishman, the Aussie, and Patrick Reed, the American, as they will enter round three as the final grouping.
In what might be the most anticipated Masters ever, with big name after big name and their stories jockeying for attention, one of the best stories halfway home has turned out to be one that few saw coming. 3 years ago, Mark Leishman was getting ready to play in his fourth Masters when he had to hastily withdraw. His wife Audrey fell seriously ill and had to be placed in a medically induced coma.
For, you know, a good 4 to 5 days, looked like she wasn't going to survive.
Remarkably, she did. And then, the next year, returned to caddy for her husband in the par 3 contest.
I'm not 100% yet. I might not ever get to 100% again, but I'm here and I'm healthy enough to be doing this with my children and my husband, and I can't really ask for more than that.
2 years after that return, Mark Leishman is no longer a sidebar here at the Masters. He shares attention with the player he chases into the weekend, another man connected to this town, albeit in a much different way. Near a decade ago, Patrick Reed led Augusta University, then Augusta State, to a pair of NCAA championships. His Friday 66 included 9 birdies.
Just one of those things that anytime I can allow my putter to do the work, it's always a good thing. It's showing this week.
Both Leishman and Reed have come this week in search of a first major title. Win this tournament, and they would forge an altogether different connection to Augusta, Georgia. A connection many have only dreamed of. 36 holes to go now. On Sunday, someone's dreams are going to come true.
Tune in from about 6 o'clock this evening. Build up for the first tee-offs, as you heard from Roscoe, around about 6:30. And then, so I suppose the last, we'll have, what, golf on the TV till what, wee small hours of tomorrow morning, won't
they? Yeah, I think the those leaders there, Patrick Reed and Mark Leishman, will go off sometime around maybe 10 o'clock UAE time. And so they will play. The rounds have been taking a long time. A lot of players were complaining that they were over 5 hours to complete the rounds. But they've made the halfway cut. The field will be a lot shorter. And so most of the play will still be going to probably around 2:30, 3 a.m. UAE time, Tom.
Turning our attention now to all things cricket, which has been very much in the headlines in recent times for all the wrong reasons. County Championship back underway over in the United Kingdom at the moment. The traditional universities against counties warm-up games, if you like, before. But I think it's fair to say that all the eyeballs of the cricketing world will turn to new beginnings as the IPL gets underway a little later on this evening. Who kicks things off? Mark Archer.
Yeah, it's a big match. It's the 11th edition of the IPL. Obviously, lots of chat recently in the recent weeks about Test cricket. Australia getting hammered over there in South Africa. Ball tampering. New Zealand defeating England in New Zealand. But now all eyes are focused. All the best players in the world are generally heading across to India to take part in the 11th edition of the IPL. And it's a big match this evening to kick it off, Tom. Match one at Wankhede Stadium in Mumbai. It's the defending champions, the Mumbai Indians, taking on the 2-time winners, the Chennai Super Kings. Let's just have a quick listen to a preview of match one of the IPL.
We are set. The first game of the IPL 2018. This is ESPN Rikin for Match Day Run Order. We're in the dugout with Ajit Agarkar and Deep Das Gupta. We're talking about two of the most prolific teams in IPL history, one of whom returns after 2 years. Now, what's the sentiment ahead of this? Defending champions, Wankhede Stadium, probably the one of the strongest or the favourites for the tournament. And at the same time, now Chennai returning. Can they still be the same team they were? Ajit, thoughts?
Yeah, huge day for Chennai. I mean, look, for Mumbai, it's another season. They've probably lost a couple of players who've been part of their setup for the last 10 years or maybe best part of 10 years. So a little bit of a change for Mumbai, but not as big a change as Chennai. I mean, Chennai have tried to assemble more or less the same squad that they had. A lot older, most of those players. So we'll have to see how they go in this edition. But huge day for them. I'm sure they are glad to be back. I think they've been one of the successful teams in the IPL. And you want them back.
But that's the thing. You've teased it up. They're back after 2 years. They've tried to, it's almost like they tried to halt time from 2015 to 2018. But many of those players are not the same, MS Dhoni included. Yeah. So is this going to be a really tricky year with the sort of squad that they've picked?
True, it is going to be tricky, but that's how MSD is. I mean, if you look at MS Dhoni, he likes familiarity. He likes guys that he's played with before. He knows how to handle them. Even the changes, for example, Ashwin's not there, but Bhaji's there. Hmm. So, it's like-for-like changes as well there. So I think he likes that because he's not one of those guys who talks a lot and has those, hour-long, two-hour-long team meetings. So he likes that way. And it's going to be interesting. And the most interesting part would be, I mean, the first 11 is still all right. But if there are injuries, backup is really thin. So that's tricky. That's going to be really tricky.
Yeah, I mean, it almost feels like they've picked a team which might suit their conditions when they play in Chennai. Actually, how good they will be when they travel, we'll have to wait and see.
Well, that's an interesting one, because you normally say if you win all your games at home, that should be enough. And the odd game away, you could go forward. But that's cutting it a bit fine. You mentioned they've lost a couple of players from the core group. One is Harbhajan Singh, goes to the other side. 5-2 is Mumbai's record of the vankade against Chennai. Harbhajan is part of those wins. Comes around to play. Harbhajan Singh is not playing too much cricket outside of the IPL. Thoughts as he returns to vankade?
Again, you know, that kind of experience can only do your team good. I think Harbhajan's been used to bowling in tough conditions in Mumbai. So I think the Chennai conditions will suit him. He's been a quality bowler over the years. We'll have to wait till the season starts, how this Chennai team goes. On paper, you look like they've got all the experience in the world. But like I said, they're a lot older than maybe they were 2 or 3 or 4 years back when they were all peaking for Chennai. Mumbai have lost a big player in Harbhajan.
We say that old. It's not necessarily a young man's game, T20, but is it an 11 old men's game? You know, when you have all of them,
as long as they're fit, they should be all right. I mean,
quick prediction, Mumbai-Chennai, or should I not trouble you with the prediction now?
I'm going to go Mumbai.
Yeah. I think Mumbai, yeah.
Fair enough. Yeah. We'll get a detailed prediction on the pre-show, which we'll have Deepa and Ajit for. Make sure you catch that half an hour before the start of play across our network on ESPN Cricket for Match Day on Order. We can't wait for the IPL.
Mega Auction has made and broken a couple of players as well. I mean, one thing the IPL has done is unearth talent, hasn't it? I mean, we talk a lot about the big names and the big names that go in the auctions and things like that. But Rashid Khan in recent times is proof of the fact that, you know, you can go from being a nobody to being, obviously a very wealthy individual now because of what he's getting in the auctions. But there's this young lad, isn't there, this Sandip Lamichane, who is a lot of people are talking about at the moment. 2 years ago, he's just 17 years old, a bit of a leggy. 2 years ago, didn't have a passport. He comes from Nepal, comes from a small village about 5 hours from Kathmandu, but he's been picked up by the Delhi Daredevils, and obviously this is, you know, there's been a lot talked about him as well. And that's what the IPL does. It provides that sort of platform.
Well, it's life-changing for young cricketers, particularly from the associate nations, not from the mainstream countries, to get an opportunity to rub shoulders with these great players. It's a great opportunity for younger Indians to get exposure. You know, there's so much focus on Indian cricket on the national team. This really puts a lot of youngsters into the spotlight. They get to share dressing rooms with other great players, not just Indian players, but international players. They get a chance to have these international coaches come in and work with them. So it's a great development tool for not just Indian domestic talent, but some of the youngsters, as you just talked about there, from the associate world, get a chance to rub shoulders with the very best. And it does really, all those best players we talk about from around the world do gather and do take part in the IPL. So looking forward to it, Tom. 6:30 this evening, the first match at Wankhede Stadium in Mumbai. Of course, the Indians defending champions versus Stephen Fleming and MS Dhoni's Chennai Super Kings.
One player who will, or two players who will not be there this year are Messrs. Smith and Warner. So what was the decision there? The franchises took the decisions not to honour their contracts, is that right?
Yeah, they basically said after this whole ball tampering incident and they were found... Firstly, the players were found guilty by the ICC, which banned them. Then Cricket Australia came in and gave them the 12-month bans. And then very quickly after that, the IPL, as a body, came out and says Steve Smith and David Warner will not take part in
the
ITL.
Could Cricket Australia have banned them from playing the IPL or not?
Well, yes, in theory, because you have to get a non-compete certificate or a certificate of non-objection. Yeah. And they could have done that, but the IPL... premeditated that move by saying we don't want your players who have been found guilty of bringing the game into disrepute coming and playing in the IPL. So the players will play literally now no cricket, I don't think. Apart from, I think they've been allowed to play grade cricket back in Australia, so play club cricket if they want to, which would be interesting for Steve Smith and David Warner. The biggest news this week, though, really was the players had a window to appeal those sentences. And I thought that David Warner would be one player who probably would appeal the sentence, but Cameron Bancroft, Steve Smith and David Warner have all elected not to appeal the decisions by Cricket Australia for the ban. So that's where it stands at this stage. Interesting comments in the week by the Australian pundit and ex-player Ian Chappell about the whole ball tampering scandal. And then he also gives some thoughts because Darren Lehman, the coach, has also stepped down on Ian Chappell talking about what his thoughts were, but also who could be considered for the next Australian coach job.
Right, so Stephen Smith, David Warner and Cam Bancroft all deciding not to appeal their sanctions. I've got Ian Chappell joining me for some thoughts on that. Ian, just sitting and watching this from a distance, are you surprised at all by the decision they've made?
Well, I think they've made the right decisions, really. I think the fact that, as I said before, the fact that they're out of the game for 12 months, particularly Smith and Warner, I think is doing them a favour. And I think they would have lost the public a bit if they had had have appealed. So I think they've made the right decision.
The last time you spoke to us, you referred to how this tag of being a cheat doesn't sit well on with the Australian public at all. Do you think that the public would have softened towards the players after these press conferences where they were so visibly emotional?
Yes, I think that it definitely softened after those press conferences. Once again, particularly in the case of Smith and Bancroft. I understand there was a bit of criticism of David Warner for, you know, delaying his, but I understand where he's coming from. I mean, he had two children, two very young children with him, and as he said, his priority was to get the kids home to bed, which I thought was quite reasonable.
There's virtually been no talk of the cricket in all of this, Ian, but it was quite visible how much Warner and Smith matter to this Australian test team in the defeat that they endured in that last test match. These will be huge holes for them to fill going forward in their cricket for the next year.
Even bigger holes, Gaurav, when you look through the Shield run-getters for this last summer, and start to think about, all right, well, who might replace these players? And it's not a pretty picture. I think Australia are going to, they're going to struggle. I think they're going to struggle mightily without Warner and without Smith. But if that's the price they've got to pay to, for what's happened in South Africa, then that's, it might be a high price, but I think it's worth paying.
Right, Ian, also as a former Australian captain yourself, having observed the game for so many years and watched captains in operation, what have you made of Tim Payne?
I think he's done a reasonable job in very, very difficult circumstances. I think he was the right choice at the time. The only problem I've got with going forward with Tim Payne as a more of a long-term captain is, his fingers have been a major problem for him, and that's one of the reasons why he's played so little for Australia in recent times, because he's had very serious finger injuries. And one of the things you're looking for with a captain is the fact that he's out there every day. It's not the number one thing that you look for in a captain. There are many other things you look for before that. Right. So that's, other than that, I don't have a query at all with Tim Payne. I think he's the right bloke to do the job.
And of course, the other man they have to find for the job is a replacement for Darren Lehman. Is there anyone at the top of your head you think, Ian, who can come and do the job for Australia and restore or improve the team culture, which has been the one sort of phrase that's been going around?
If you've got to have one, the guy that I think I'd have would be Jason Gillespie. I think he's had some success as a coach. I think he's a decent bloke. I think he's got a good... He's always had a very good feel for the history of the game and the history of Australian cricket. And if you look back on his career, he played the game, I think, in a pretty good way. So he would have some credibility in trying to restructure or reform the Australian culture.
So those are the thoughts of a man in the know. Mark Archer, let's just, I know it's been done to death. I know there's been a lot of chat about it, but let's just start on that point of the three players in question all choosing not to appeal. Right decision?
I think in the case of Steve Smith and Cameron Bancroft, they had nothing to gain by appealing the suspension, apart from probably annoying their employer, Cricket Australia. I thought David Warner might appeal because I think his days might be done and dusted as a representing Australia. I think they may cut all ties with him going forward, and David Warner will be a bit like Kevin Peterson, will become a franchise T20 player, still earn a lot of money. But I think Cricket Australia, and we haven't quite dug into the full story yet, but reading all the reports, it seems that David Warner was the man behind the plot to tamper with the ball, and he got the younger player Cameron Bancroft involved. Steve Smith was almost an innocent bystander who caught on to what was going on, said, I don't want to be part of it, but by saying that, he was part of it, and then as a captain, he had to take responsibility. So that's how I read the situation. The reason I thought David Warner might appeal is because he's got none to lose, because he's going to potentially not play for Australia again. He might as well try and get the sentence pulled back, because it was an extremely harsh sentence, so then he can go and play franchise cricket. That's why I thought David Warner might appeal, but they've not wanted to annoy their employer, so they've all said, we'll hold our hands up, take the ban, and we'll come back in 12 months' time.
I've been fascinated by this story since the moment it broke. Well,
we were here
on air for 2 weeks
on
ago,
Twitter,
wasn't it?
Yeah. Exactly.
We were watching it happen here, and Mark Archer brought it to our attention as well. Tom Bushell has rejoined us here from our broadcast position. In fact, he's just flown in from the UK, so who better to ask? First and foremost, welcome back, Tom.
Thank you very much.
Good to have you on board.
Pleasure to be back.
Nice to have you here. And just want to get your thoughts, because obviously you were in the UK when this story broke.
Yeah.
Yes, we know the Australian media have bagged these three baggy green boys relentlessly, yeah. But did it surprise you just the interest that it generated globally?
It's a tough one to answer. Not really, because it is such a big story and it is such a big obvious sign of clearly trying to cheat and trying to get an advantage, an unfair advantage against your opposition. So that didn't surprise me, but the outpouring surprised me in terms of this has happened before. And it hasn't had the same attention as it's had this time. The mood really changed for me in the UK press when Steve Smith and Cameron Bancroft both did their press conferences, and clearly emotional and regrettable wished things had been different. But it's a tough one, isn't it? Because they need to be punished, because obviously what they've done there is not right. But at the same time, I certainly with Steve Smith, I think with Cameron Bancroft, he's just been naive. He's just been young, naive, and thought to himself, oh, well, then maybe this is how it happens in the team. But, you know, I'll do whatever I need to do. Whereas Steve Smith, like what Arch says, okay, he might not have been part of it, but he certainly was aware of it. And at that point, as captain, he should say, hang on, boys, you won't be doing that on my watch. I can understand the emotion, and I think that's what people have now come to see is, they've made a mistake and they're getting absolutely battered for it.
I want to try and draw another international parallel if I can, because I suppose in terms of similarities, closest similarity to cricket would possibly be baseball. And a lot's been made, Ross Crist, about, you know, tampering of the ball and ball tampering. And I just wonder what the sort of American reaction would be to that. Is there the equivalent in baseball? Can you tamper with a ball in baseball?
Yeah, you can definitely tamper with the ball in baseball. Putting pine tar on the ball gives you a little bit of better grip. But let's switch sports to football. Last year at this time, what were we talking about? Deflating the footballs to throw the football a little bit longer. The New England Patriots, part of the Deflategate, and Tom Brady saw himself sitting out for 4 games, even though he still proclaims his innocence for that one. So, yeah, ball tampering happens.
Also with batting in baseball when they cork the bat, don't they?
When they cork the bat. Sammy Sosa got caught with a corked bat. Which gives you a little bit more power when you hit the ball. So, yeah, this stuff's been going on for a long, long time. George Brett in the 1980 Kansas City Royals, he had too much pine tar on his bat, and the umpire threw him out, and he basically had a meltdown in the middle of the field trying to kill this umpire. So, you know, where does this Australian team rack up with the biggest cheaters in the world, you know?
Newcastle United make the goals bigger for whatever end they're shooting at. It works really well.
The funny thing about baseball is the umpire in baseball, the home umpire, has a big bag of balls basically he carries. So each time the ball's hit or hits the ground, they use a new ball. It's right. A new ball for pretty much every pitch in baseball.
pretty much. Anytime the ball gets scuffed, it hits the ground. You give them a brand new ball, and the ball goes out somewhere in the fans. But yeah, it does change the game if you do tamper with the baseball. It certainly helps the pitchers, and you can tamper it with it. The hitters can tamper with it by putting too much pine tar on their bat. So yeah, it's been going on in all sports across all seven continents.
Oh, Steve, I think with Cameron Bancroft, he'll recover from this, right? And he'll get back and he'll play for Australia again. Steve Smith, will he play for them again?
Yeah, I think he will. I think he's done the right thing. I think as everyone's read into it a bit more, he's been sort of a, not an innocent bystander, but sure, a man caught in the crossfire and has had to take responsibility. I have my doubts again, and I've said that David Warner now will play for Australia. He's 32 years old,
sure,
despite being a heck of a talent, but I think he's just been a criminal. He hasn't got a lot of sympathy from anywhere around the world, even in Australia, about his previous conduct. He's been in some high-profile incidents. Let's talk about Joe Root back in Birmingham. He's been a bit of a yap dog on the field. He's been there, but they've used him. The Australian cricket team, they talk about this culture. Mm. They have used him as part of that culture.
Took him off the leash,
to be the guy. They let him off the leash and said, you go and do what you do. We need. And Darren Lehman brought that back into the Australian team as coach. He said he wanted to bring a hard-edged attitude back into that team culture, and ultimately what's backfired, that's all backfired on them, and Lehman's gone, the captain's gone, the dog that is, you know, David Warner's gone off, you know, back, and so they've created an environment. What you got to remember here is what I struggled with is the ICC regulation, or the penalty is a one match ban, which was given to Steve Smith and Cameron Bancroft because David Warner wasn't guilty in what they found to him to do. Then the difference by the Cricket Australia, which has banned them not for ball tampering, they've banned them for bringing the game into disrepute, yeah, and it's caught them TV sponsors. That's why they've banned them for 12 months.
But that's what's prompted the ICC to have a full-blown investigation.
They're re-looking into those penalties and sanctions. Because you've got to remember here...
Because are they then banned from playing cricket elsewhere, or just for Australia?
No, because... So it's like your employer. So
because Cameron Bancroft was good coming
county
to the UK,
cricket as well. Yeah. So they have a Cricket Australian contract, so it's their primary employer, and then when they want to go play in the IPL or county cricket or the big bet or another competition, they give a non-objection certificate that they can go play those competitions. So the players have been banned. They have said you can go play club cricket. They can't play for their states, which is like full professional. Can't play for New South Wales in the case of Steve Smith or David Warner. So they can't play first-class cricket or 50-over cricket, but they go play for their club sides if they want to. You know, and I think Steve Smith probably will go back and play club cricket. So that's the big thing here. You know, it's been a massive talking point in the world of sport.
Huge. The biggest story so far this year, without a question of any doubt.
It's interesting comments that have come out of the back of it, because all these reviews that are going on, the integrity report from Cricket Australia, the ICC looking at the whole issue of the sanctions, but also the ball tampering element. Paddles Hadley, Sir Richard Hadley, midweek as well, turning round and saying, you know, the ICC need to look at this whole thing, because players, fundamentally tamper with the ball. That's what they do.
It's been done for years, and it's always been done. Basically, when a player shines the ball, a bowler, which he's allowed to do on his trousers or the players, it's tampering with the ball, but they're allowed to do it. And let's look at the high-profile instance. Faf du Plessis, the South African captain, twice found guilty of ball tampering, once with a zipper and once using a mint or a lolly to sweeten up and shine the ball, really. Jimmy Anderson and Stuart Broad have both been found guilty of ball tampering. So it does happen. And Mike Athen, dirt in the pocket. Sachin Tendulkar was accused of it, removing grass from the seam. So it does happen. The ball does get tampered with, but it wasn't the premeditated, organised, structured way
sandpaper.
on the field, which was,
and also being caught so red-handedly, right, by the cameras. I saw one great tweet, which was Cameron Bancroft as the unluckiest man in the world. He's found the only South African sports cameraman that isn't looking for girls in the crowd during a break and play.
But to go on with that, it's an international match from South Africa. You have two continents basically going at it in cricket. I'm sitting there in the production meeting. I'm sitting there in the production meeting, and all the cameramen are there, and the director's saying, all right, you guys follow these guys, and you, right here, your only job is to follow the ball. You stand right there, and wherever that ball goes, your camera goes, and that's your full-time job for the next 5 days. So you have to be in another level of being an idiot to think you can just pull out some sandpaper and start shining up a ball in the middle of that.
And the other thing was, within 5 minutes of this happening, we're talking about it. We've seen it live on Twitter, and we're talking about it on a radio station in Dubai. So that's how quickly this type of incident now explodes. 10 years ago, there was no social media. 20 years ago, there was probably one camera from a long distance filming both ends, and that's the difference. These days, you just can't get away with it.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.